You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Alert, hourly update, breaking crime news now.
I'm Jackie Howard. Prominent commercial real estate attorney Gary Ferris's remains were found on a burn pile, a bullet lodged in a rib bone. The discovery on the family's 10-acre Cherokee County, Georgia property is where Ferris lived with his wife, Melody, and son, Scott. As the investigation progressed, a second bullet is found in their home's basement. So how did the body end up in the burn pile, 50 yards away? As police put that question to family members, they began pointing fingers at each other. Scott Ferris ran the farm's day-to-day operation, his work and personal expenses covered by his father. Mom Melody says Scott was being pushed by his father to get another job. Scott Ferris denies the allegations, saying tension in the family is caused by Melody disappearing for weeks at a time and spending Gary Ferris's money. Investigators discover Melody is having an affair and her lover lives in Tennessee. After investigating for nearly a year, Melody Ferris is arrested for the murder of Gary Ferris. At trial, Melody's defense claims Scott, at about 6 feet 8 inches tall, 280 pounds, is more capable of moving Gary's 6 foot 4 inch 300 pound body than she was. But police and prosecutors believe Melody Ferris is the killer. She was the only one home at the time police believe Gary Ferris was killed. Then, at trial, prosecutors called a witness, an analyst from Cherokee County Sheriff's Office Intelligence Division, who analyzed phone records discovering Gary Ferris's cell phone moved from the house to the burn pile and back to the house after investigators believed the body was already on the burn pile. Melody Ferris was the only one home then as well. Also at trial, prosecutors call Roy Rusty Barron Jr., Melody's lover. He testifies to a phone call with Melody.
You told them that the defendant, probably the last minute of the last conversation, she said, "Gary is in the burn pile." "No," she said, "he is in the burn pile." And I said, "What?" And she said, "He's in the burn pile." And I said, "Do not say another word and do not tell me anything. I do not need to know." Those were your words to law enforcement in July the 24th of 2018. Is that true?
Yes.
Melody Ferris is found guilty of murdering her husband. At her sentencing, Melody maintained her innocence, then shocked the courtroom.
"Not only did I not do this, I know who did. I know Scott killed his father."
Melody Ferris tells 48 Hours that she saw Scott Ferris near the burn pile the day before Gary Ferris's body was discovered. She says she believes Scott Ferris used his pickup truck to move the body, then planted the bullet found in the basement to frame her. And the motive, she says, is the farm. Scott wanted it. Scott Ferris denies all allegations. Melody Ferris is sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 30 years. More crime and justice news after this.
I'm Nicole Parton. On Thursday, a judge determined that prosecutors are permitted to seek the death penalty for Brian Kohberger if he is found guilty of the 22 murders of four University of Idaho students, despite his recent diagnosis of autism. Kohberger, 30, faces charges in connection with the stabbing deaths of Ethan Chapin, Zaina Kernoodle, Madison Mogan, and Kaylee Conglaves at a rental property in Idaho on November 13, 2022. Prosecutors have indicated their intention to pursue the death penalty should Kohberger be convicted during his trial, which is scheduled for August. However, Kohberger's defense team urged Judge Stephen Hippler to dismiss the death penalty as a potential sentence, referencing his autism spectrum disorder. They have also submitted various motions contesting the death penalty, including claims of the state's failure to properly provide evidence. In court documents, the defense argued, quote, "Mr. Kohberger's autism spectrum disorder diminishes his culpability. It undermines the intended effects of capital punishment and puts him at an unjust risk of wrongful conviction and execution." They claim that executing an individual with autism would violate the Eighth Amendment's prohibition against cruel and unjust punishment. Prosecutors, however, countered that according to the U.S. Supreme Court rulings, the only mental condition that disqualifies a person facing the death penalty is an intellectual disability. They noted that Kohberger's autism was classified as mild and did not include any intellectual impairments. The judge sided with the prosecution, stating, quote, the defendant has not established that ASD is comparable to an intellectual disability for the purposes of death penalty exemption, nor has he demonstrated a national consensus against executing individuals with ASD. He acknowledged that while Kohberger's autism could be considered a mitigating factor in weighing the aggravated circumstances for a death sentence, it does not disqualify him from facing capital punishment. Here's Nancy Grace weighing in on the topic, speaking to Megyn Kelly.
Now, the judge has ruled that they may not bring in evidence of alleged autism on Kohberger's behalf in the case in chief. Regarding autism, the defense wanted to bring in their theory that he has autism, although apparently none of the defense experts have stated thus far that he is autistic or under the spectrum. None of them have said that. They said they wanted to bring it in, as you surmised, because of his odd behavior. What odd behavior, the judge says? I don't see any odd behavior. He just sits there. So, therefore, that's irrelevant. If it becomes relevant, then I will review your motion again if you choose to renew it. But as of right now, the only way it would be relevant is if they noted quirky or odd behavior when he takes a stand.
Following his arrest, Kohberger was evaluated by a clinical neuropsychologist, Dr. Rachel Orr, who diagnosed him with autism spectrum disorder level 1 without accompanying intellectual or language impairment. In a separate ruling on the same day, the judge allowed that jurors would likely hear much of the 911 call made by two surviving roommates approximately 8 hours after the murders, as they discovered one of their housemates was unresponsive. However, statements from an unidentified woman during the call who conveyed information she has not personally witnessed would be excluded from the trial, according to the judge. Jurors will also have access to text messages sent by the two surviving roommates around the time of the attack after 4 a.m. when one reported seeing a masked individual in the residence, contingent on the prosecution establishing a proper foundation for the evidence's admission. Crime Alert Hourly Update will keep you posted as this trial unfolds.
I'm Drew Nelson. A shoplifting arrest in Minnesota prevents a possible mass shooting planned for the next day. Muhammad Adan Muhammad, age 24, was arrested a week ago Thursday in Mankato after he stole items from a sporting goods store. Muhammad was wearing a medical mask, gloves, a winter jacket, and a green cap. He grabbed body armor, bear spray, and magazines for a 9mm firearm, totaling over $2,150. Employees became suspicious when he took expensive items without checking the prices. Muhammad told shoppers he had an AR-style rifle, quote, calibrated to 9mm. Then he ran from the store. Security tried to stop him, but Muhammad got into a Toyota Sienna and sped off. He nearly ran over a bystander during his escape. Police found a list Muhammad left behind, the list labeled Survival Gear List with Alternative. It listed sleeping bags, knives, bows and arrows, lighters, pepper spray, and 8 firearm magazines. Investigators believed Muhammad was planning a mass shooting within 24 hours. An officer remembered Muhammad from a previous social media investigation. St. Peter Police Chief Matt Grochow tells WCCO he met with Muhammad personally.
It was cordial. He wasn't aggressive towards law enforcement. He was appropriate with us. We left with an understanding that at that moment he was safe and that moment the community was safe.
Muhammad had posted pictures of himself aiming a rifle at the camera. The hashtag on his posts was Death to American and Israeli Imperialism, all one word. Police searched Muhammad's home in St. Peter, Minnesota, finding the rifle he showed online, 2 3D-printed guns, and they arrested him without incident. The neighborhood is shocked beyond belief, says one neighbor by the name of Dunya.
He has a very beautiful heart. He's a really good guy. It's just, he's not mentally, physically there right now at the moment. We start seeing Muhammad just start talking to himself, not socializing with us, with the kids.
A judge set bail at $500,000. Muhammad remains in custody, charged with felony theft and violent threats. He is banned from owning guns for 1 year. He will appear in court again in May.
I'm Jennifer Gould. A seemingly ordinary glass of milk turned into a potential death sentence for a 77-year-old Florida woman, allegedly at the hands of her own teenage son. According to an arrest affidavit, the elderly woman poured herself the drink only to be met with an alarming chemical smell and called 911. When police arrived at the family's Deltona home, the victim's immediate and shocking accusation was captured on body cam. Take a listen.
He put Clorox in the milk. Okay. I think I just had a little bit because I tasted it.
Okay.
The he, police allege, was her own son, Eduardo Espinal Raguan. The 17-year-old was reportedly found by authorities, quote, hiding in the room with a dog, end quote, amidst the aftermath. The elderly mom was swiftly taken to the hospital for evaluation, and disturbing details soon emerged, suggesting this was not an isolated incident either. Authorities alleged a troubling history of battering of the victim by the teen. The affidavit says the mom's the only milk drinker, too, in the house, making her the obvious target. Cops on the scene even sniffed the milk and confirmed it reeked of bleach. Espinal Raguan allegedly admitted to taking the bleach from the laundry room, pouring it into the milk container, knowing it could harm someone. He reportedly told police he was angry at the victim and wanted to make her sick because he no longer wanted to live in the home. Adding to the suspicion, the victim herself reportedly told police she suspected her son due to escalating, quote-unquote, recent conflicts. The teen now faces a battery of charges, including poisoning by food or water, attempted felony murder, and aggravated abuse of an elderly person. The investigation continues. For the latest crime and justice news, follow the Crime Alert Hourly Update on your favorite podcast app. With this crime alert, I'm Jennifer Gould.
How could a beautiful young first grade teacher be stabbed 20 times, including in the back, allegedly die of suicide? Yes, that was the medical examiner's official ruling. After a closed-door meeting, he first named it a homicide. Why? What happened to Ellen Greenberg? A huge American miscarriage of justice. For an in-depth look at the facts, see What Happened to Ellen on Amazon. All proceeds to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.